rude, crude, and deplorable.
Hello, and welcome to the Prickly City Podcast for February 4th, 2018. I'm Janine Fadich, and here is your host and the creator of Prickly City, Scott Stantis.
Thank you, Janine, and thank you all for listening to this week's edition of the Prickly City Podcast. We have a special guest on the line, by the way. We don't have a lot of guests here. Usually the show is just me talking about the comic strip, Janine rolling her eyes at me. That's pretty much the podcast. But this week we have a very special guest. I'm stoked about having Ted Rall is like the cartoonist supreme. He's a syndicated columnist. He's a pundit. He's an agitator. You're anything else I've missed here, Ted?
I'm really, really good at making a mean steak.
Really?
But, how? You know, that probably is not very relevant.
We only have a word for that. We'd have to actually try it.
Yeah, that's true.
That's true.
But the reason Ted's on is...
Next time we're all in the same place.
Ted is a co-author for a new book. One of my favorite titles for a book in the last decade, I think. I'm not kidding.
Really?
Meet the Deplorables, Infiltrating Trump America. They gave us the government we deserve. You can get the book over at Amazon. You can get it from Barnes & Noble. But buy it from a local like independent bookstore. That'd be the best, right, Ted?
It is, and not just because it would be about supporting that store, but also I would get more of the money.
Is that true?
Yeah, like people don't realize that authors are paid based on whether the book is considered quote-unquote discounted or not. So in the old days, if a book was sold, if you saw it on sale for, say, 25% off at the regular bookstore, the author would only get a much smaller share of the royalty, not just 25% less, like a lot less. And so Amazon routinely discounts everything. And so everything you buy on Amazon is considered discounted. So it's, if the author was normally going to get, say, $2 for the book, she might get 70 cents instead.
There's
definitely less money going to the author. Yeah.
I didn't know that. Well, see, we learned something here on Prickly City Podcast. And knowledge is what, Janine?
Power.
There it is. Thank you, Ted. You made us smarter.
You're welcome.
And more powerful.
Perhaps.
So I'm looking at the list of books that you have, that you've written, Ted, and the show's not that long. I mean, no one has that much bandwidth, but you've written a bazillion books, but you had one on the New York Times bestseller list just here, Bernie, a biography of Bernie Sanders, and also a look at his politics and what he stands for. Also, I'm having a total mind fart here. The book that, before that. Anyone?
There was Snowden.
Snowden book.
Edward Snowden.
Oh, right.
Yes, which was also but that was a bestseller as well, was it not?
It was, yes, both of those were.
And you're coming up with Pope Francis, coming up very, very soon.
Yep, March 13th.
Wow. So, but right now we're talking about Meet the Deplorables. This is a great book. It's with your friend Harmon Leon, or is it Leon?
It's Leon.
Okay. Sorry.
I like Leon better.
I got very French when I was looking at the book.
Leon.
I said, it is Armand Leon, which would be wrong. Harmon Leon and Ted Rall. And so, I mean, Harmon actually goes to all these. He goes to Oath Keepers. He goes to Victory Over, I forget what it's called, the Victory Over Gayness things where they try to de-gay you.
Pray the Gay Away.
That's right, yes.
Pray the Gay Away. Purity Rings, which who knew that was even still around?
Right. Yeah, you read about them back in the 90s, maybe, and then forgot all about it. But they're still filling stadiums doing this stuff.
Yeah, and they have, which is very strange to me. But they have guns, lots and lots and lots and lots of guns. They have, destination gun weddings.
Wow. So exactly what is this book about?
You know, I have to admit that I think if I get remarried, I would probably want a gun wedding myself.
You think so? Yeah, well, I'd come.
I like guns. Guns are cool. Guns are fun.
Say it again.
Oh, I just wanted to tell, because people don't know exactly what is this book about.
Oh, right. Here's a nutshell. Harmon Leon is an infiltrator. So what that means is that whereas most journalists would go to, let's say they would go to a gun show and interview people who are buying guns, he instead would go and pose as a gun buyer and buy guns so that he passes as one of them. So the theory being, and I think it's a pretty, it's true, that if people think you are one of them, they are more likely to open up and be honest with you. So he, for example, joined anti-abortion protesters and protested outside abortion clinics, as an example, in order to, you know, get people to open up to him who might not have otherwise. So he did this for I think it's 27 different organizations that are documented in the book. And so what I supply is the political analysis, because there's five different sort of types of, as what we call the deplorables, in a tongue-in-cheek reference to Hillary Clinton's insult. And I provide an introduction to sort of the politics and the lay of the land for each of them. And then I provide, of course, drew cartoons and
So I mean, and by the way, if you pick up the book, it's not just a total smear against people like this, like, you know, flyover country and stuff like that. I was really impressed that the language was not dismissive of these folks, that it actually talks about that they have serious concerns, that these are people who take these things seriously, some of which are scary. And I think Leon actually lets the actors in these different scenarios kind of hang themselves. Would that be pretty accurate there?
Yeah, well, that was definitely the idea. You know, look, and in some cases, they're not hanging themselves at all, right? I mean, a lot of people, I mean, yes, are there, like, stupid, bigoted people who are stupid and bigoted and voted for Trump? Sure there are. But are there also reasonable people who were trying to send a message to Washington about the dysfunction of the two parties? There were. And there's people who have a lot of legitimate grievances that people on the left and the right would agree are legit. So it's we're trying to get a cross section. It's non-scientific, but I think it gets closer than most other attempts especially for people who don't really know about, like, for example, Flyover America. They don't know what a hell house is, and I've never even heard of such a thing.
Could you tell our listeners exactly kind of what a hell house is, please? You can't just walk past that.
Well, so a hell house is a Christian version of a haunted house, right? So right before Halloween, if you live not in a city, you might have a haunted house where you walk and you pay money and people jump out and scream at you and try to scare you. So a hell house.
You just described my childhood.
Sort of the same thing.
Go on, please.
It's kind of the same thing, except that in this case, it's run by Christian groups. And the scenario, and basically you go into themed rooms that are trying to send a conservative Christian message. So, for example, if you become lesbian, you will be shunned and scorned and mocked, and you might end up committing suicide because of that. Or there's an abortion room, and so on. So it's all about scenarios like that. Apparently, it's far more effective, by the way, in terms of frightening people than a regular House of Horrors. Apparently, kids come out of these things really traumatized.
Yeah, but we're talking to Ted Rall, who's a co-author of Meet the Deplorables, Infiltrating Trump's America, co-authored with Harmon Leon here. And so, but the book goes on. I don't know that they actually profile any of the people that you described earlier in your description. That is, people who had serious concerns with the about draining and wanting to drain the swamp, who felt that they were being lied to and manipulated by Washington, D.C. I don't know that did I miss that part here? Because it seems like it just goes to extreme place. Like, I just last night, one of the chapters I was reading was the Oath Keepers, who are bat crap crazy, you know, people who like guns and are going to defend the Constitution no matter what, even though they don't seem to actually understand it. They begin each chapter meeting, by the way, reading it out loud. So you think maybe
you would get it if you read it.
Yeah, you know, but no. So I guess I'm saying is, I mean, if I'm trying to convince a friend to pick up this book, what would you tell him, Ted?
I would say it's sort of a tour of right-wing America that you may or may not know about, even if you are from right-wing America. It's a and it, and I in terms of the legitimate I guess it's true that the dysfunction of Washington is not touched upon really in many of Harmon's infiltrations. That's more like the way you describe it. It's more in my analysis pieces that I get into that. But there's a lot of despair, right? I mean, there's the people who are getting their cars for repossessed. There's the suicide cleanup crew that's operating in Mike Pence's Indiana, which is a sort of a ground zero of the opioid epidemic. So there is definitely a sense of just you know, people who are lost and looking for answers. I mean, I kind of like that we ended up on a high note, and I do think it's an optimistic high note in my hometown of Dayton, Ohio, at the Heavy Metal Church of Jesus, which you know actually sounds. I mean. It actually sounds great, you know. It's like bikers who get together and they do heavy metal, you know, Christian songs, and it sounds like, you know, really seriously, no irony. It sounds like a great church, really, and it's kind of like I would go there. You know, it sounds good. Harmon thought the same thing. There's no snark involved. He was like, yeah, they were great guys. He loved them.
Well, I was talking to some friends, some liberal cartoonists, and they were just disparaging Walmart, how terrible it is, how everyone there is treated like slave labor, and how it's just the worstest, horriblest, terriblest thing. They don't even have arugula at the time. It was just a horrible, horrible thing. I asked them, I said, well, how many people do you know who work at a Walmart? How many people would you consider friends? Or have you actually had a conversation other than, thank you, no, I don't, I brought my own bag. How many people did you actually talk to about this? And they said, I've never talked to anyone who's worked there. I don't know anyone who works there. I'm just going, holy Mary, I have a friend of mine, and she was a poster child for the Epilepsy Foundation and many, 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 continues to have many health issues. She works at Walmart, and her Walmart has been terrific with her. They've given her all the time off she needs for a myriad of health issues. Sometimes she's off for weeks, and they still, I mean, that I think goes from
store to store,
from
perhaps.
Store to store, perhaps. But I'm saying that, you know, here's a person who has the job she can get, and they're treating her pretty well.
And obviously she knows about her situation because she's in it. I mean, I think that's kind of the thing that goes wrong with a lot of reporting, certainly cross, you know, like when liberals are trying to, you know, understand conservatives, quote unquote, and vice versa, but not just in politics, right? Like you just see it, a lot of stuff is just very outsidery and feels parachuted in. I mean, look, certainly there's a brief to be made against Walmart, this the nation's largest employer that doesn't pay their workers very much and yet is raking in massive profits. But what's funny is that same exact brief could be launched against Starbucks, which pays its CEO $9,200 an hour while it pays its baristas $10 an hour. And I guarantee you that those same cartoonists that you were talking to, they buy coffee at Starbucks. I guarantee it.
Oh, I would not doubt that for a moment. I want to go. We're talking to Ted Rall, one of the co-authors of Meet the Deplorables. I was going to cut off, but I wanted to carry the conversation on for a few more minutes, if I may. And full disclosure, Ted and I talk a lot. We're very good friends. Would that be fair?
That is fair to say.
You had to think about this?
Well, I was trying to think if you were going to go in, you know, beyond friendship part, but
No. That was an experimental period. We're not talking about that. Anyway, but we've talked about, and we talk about consistently economic issues, which are duller than toast to a lot of people. But Ted, you touched on it. We talk about this widening gap. You talked about for instance, Walmart, the Wall family, there's four of them, right? Four survivors. And they control, what was the number, 46% of the capital in America?
It was something like that.
Four
people. Among the richest people in the
country. Well, of course, but we're talking about an insane percentage.
More money than you would ever need.
So could you give up, each one of them give 1% of their value up so that they could give their workers a significant raise? They could. So, Ted, I mean, I want to ask you, because you have some great theories about this, and frankly, Ted has been right about a lot of stuff, where I've said, oh, you're just a nutty, 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 nutty nut. And, of course, you know, 5 years later, it turns out to be absolutely the case. You wrote a great column recently about the Democrats could lose in 2018. They're very smug. They're certain they're going to win. Why do you think they're going to lose or could lose?
Well, I think that, yeah, I'm not saying they will lose. I mean, look, history shows that the party out of power usually picks up seats in midterm elections. So if history, if that trend continues, then Democrats should pick up some seats. But they're expecting to take back both the House and the Senate. They're talking about the big blue wave. You know, they're telling all of their supporters that everything is paramount about taking back the House and the Senate, and then we'll impeach Trump and we will inaugurate the great liberal revival. And the thing is, the problem with this whole theory is that the Democrats, first of all, have not even begun to nationalize the election the way that Newt Gingrich did with the contract with America in 1994. And so there's also no message, right? I'm obsessed with politics. You're obsessed with politics. If you talk to anybody who follows politics, it's really hard to tell anyone, okay, what exactly would the Democrats do if they got the House and the Senate back next year? I don't even know what they would do if somehow there was a violation of the Constitution that put a Democratic president into office at the same time. Would there be a $15 an hour minimum wage? Democrats aren't saying. Would they impeach Trump? They're not saying that either. It's all by implication. Would we pull out of Afghanistan or Iraq? No one knows. So there's no message, right? And there's still a huge split within the Democratic Party. All the energy and the enthusiasm, and really the fundraising ability is with the Bernie progressive wing of the base of the party. But the party's still run by the Clintonistas, and they control the DNC, this guy Tom Perez. And so there's these huge divisions that really show that the party hasn't learned anything from what happened in 2016. Because, Donald Trump didn't win that election. Hillary Clinton lost it. And that's what the Democrats are, I think, they're whistling past the graveyard as they head into the midterms.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, because as we were talking about this, and Peggy Noonan actually had a similar thought on her column this weekend in the Wall Street Journal, a conservative commentator, ex-former speechwriter for Ronald Reagan. And she mentions that rage is, and it's what I've been saying on this podcast in conversations with my friend Ted Rall, rage is not a strong enough platform. Anger is an exhausting emotion and does not last. What does last is we're going to do A, B, C, and D. The contract with America, which Democrats and liberals despised, mostly because it was incredibly successful, because it enumerated in a very concise way what they stood for. Like Ted just mentioned, I cannot for the life of me tell you what Democrats stand for today. I can tell you what Bernie Bros stand for, but this... centrists? Yeah. I can't.
Bernie Bros are out of power, though.
Well, they're out of the loop.
Bernie Bros, what they want. Yeah, they're out of the loop. They're completely snubbed, and they're still pissed off about what happened in 2016.
Oh, just because you rig an election? Good Lord, get over it, man.
And what's funny is that some of the rigging is that people don't talk about is official rigging, right? Like, for example, the superdelegates who announced their positions early on in order to pressure other people in the party to vote for Hillary. That's against the Democratic Party rules. The delegates are not supposed to announce their standing before the convention. So, the Republicans don't have superdelegates, and the Democratic Party shouldn't have them either. You can just look at who won the election, right? With an incredibly unlikely candidate, the Republicans still won without having this superdelegate thing. So it's something that Democrats should probably get rid of, really. It's profoundly undemocratic, small d democratic. But yeah, I think, look, are they going to probably pick up some seats? Sure, all things being equal. But, Democrats are really good at pulling defeat out of the jaws of victory. They just are.
Well,
it's what they do best.
You look at the number of retiring congressmen, Republican congressmen and senators, and you have to wonder, one of two things is going to fill that seat. Either it's going to be a Democrat, and how did you describe them? Not statist Democrats, but as big business Democrats.
Corporate Democrats.
Corporate Democrats. Or you're going to have... some nut-wing Republican. who is more Trump than Trump, because here in Illinois, the Republican Party, I'm not kidding, there's a guy who's going to coast to the, to a nomination in a extremely Democratic district. Obviously, you know, it's gerrymandered because it's a very blue state here. So this guy came in under the window. Ted, I'm not kidding. He's an actual, not kidding, not exaggerating Nazi. This is going to
mean like with the swastika and everything.
He has a website. Main website is Holocaust denying. Ooh. And that the Nazis were really ultimately just victims of bad press. I'm not kidding. That's here in Illinois, by the way. So that's what, and the Republican Party here is like, oh, how do we know this guy? It's like he's run before.
Oh.
But he's running unopposed in the Republican primary. So the Illinois Republican Party is going to have a certifiable neo-Nazi on the ballot in November.
You think they'd get anybody?
Is he going to win?
No. It's a very, 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 it's like I said, they have the speaker here who's Mike Madigan, who's been Speaker of the House longer than any other speaker has served in the history of the country, 42 years now, has gerrymandered the state to within a house. He will literally draw a line and have the line go around an incumbent's he doesn't like house to get them out of their district.
I always admire a man who has attention to detail.
You have to respect this. I can go on and on about Mike Madigan here because we'll talk sometime because it is a remarkable story of his power and how powerful he is. But I want to end up with Ted Rall here, co-author of Meet the Deplorables, Infiltrating Trump America. Go to your favorite independent bookstore so Ted can get all the money.
Right.
Because even though Ted's a socialist and will lead the revolution, he still needs the Benjamins. Would that be fair?
You can also order it from my website too.
Can you? You don't send it out directly, do you?
I do, and you get it, and I sign it too.
Wow, you don't get your son to do it? Because that would be funny.
Well, when I say I, that's I in like air quotes, but it's a real Rawl who signs them. You know? I mean, it's just not like. It's not me.
It's an actual
like
Rawl.
The younger, it's a Rawl. It's in fact similar name, very similar name.
The opening chapter of this book is just remarkable. By the way, just that's what it grabs you, and I think that's the point. Is that this one tattoo parlor in Florida was offering free tattoos of Trump? If you wanted to get a Trump card tattoo, it was free. And a lot of
you would have to pay me.
I think you couldn't pay me enough. I mean,
I don't have any tattoos, so this would not be my first.
It would conflict with my Ronald Reagan tattoo. Anyway, Ted, thanks for coming on, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So again, Ted Rall, Meet the Deplorables, co-authored with Harmon Leon, Infiltrating Trump's America from, let me get this correct because I want to get it absolutely right, 39 West Press is the publisher. Meet the Deplorables. Pick it up somewhere. Give Ted the love he deserves. Also, pick up some of Ted's other books. Believe me, you could fill a house with just the books Ted's written. When the hell do you sleep? Because you do what? Editorial cartoons. You write the column. You write books. You take care of your child. Oh, Ted left. He just hung up on us.
Oh well.
We can make stuff up.
Maybe he went to sleep.
Real quick, we're going to cover stuff that happened in the Strip this week. Super fast. Because we've rude, crude, and deplorable. We're talking about Donald Trump and his crudeness and rudeness. And we had comments.
We did, this is one that kind of annoys me. 45 Nasred said, I like my president to tell it like it is. No PC, no holding back. It's quite refreshing.
So does your drunken uncle, you know, your racist uncle. And so does, by the way, you know who else tells it like it is? A four-year-old. So, I mean, do I want honesty? Absolutely. Of course you do. Do you want, do you want to kind of curtail some of the PC wave that's sweeping this nation that gets to the point that's preposterous? Yes, of course.
But not name-calling.
Well, name-calling can be pretty clever.
But this wasn't clever name-calling.
No, this is stupid. This is poo-poo head. It's half a step above poo-poo head. So that's the reason I don't like telling it like it is, I think, is a preposterous notion. I want a truth teller and truth to power. Those are the two things we need. What else?
And Knight got 49 says Trump's problem with that, what he says, is that he has no means of moderating his talk. To him, what he says is right for any situation.
Right. I mean, let's face it. When you're with your friends and you're, you know, down in a couple of beers, you're going to talk. You're going to speak differently than you do, say, on a podcast. Hopefully there's no ugly stuff comes out, or no, nothing, but your language will change, your verbiage will change, your choice of words will change. And all of that being said, yeah, I think they have an absolute point. Whoever that, who's that again?
Knight Gaunt 49.
Knight Gaunt, like hollow cheek Gaunt. Is that what? Oh, okay. You just sucked in your cheeks. You look very fetching. You look like a supermodel for a moment.
Right.
We had one more, I think, and then we're going to call it a podcast.
Yeah, you mentioned in the strip that you were raised to believe Republicans were the grown-ups.
Yeah.
And Bunwar Bagazu said, I know I can't even pronounce it.
Sounds like a 50s catchphrase for
Anyway.
Okay.
He or she says, this is Carmen's biggest problem. She was raised to believe, not raised to reason, but to partisanship. The corollary to believing that those on the right are the grown-ups is that those on the left must be all children, lacking in morals and understanding, and therefore unworthy as partners in dialogue.
I think that's well put. I think that there was something to be said for that. As Ginny and I were talking about this morning, and as we often do, she makes more sense than I do. And, you know, my point being, and I laid out a long list of why I thought this, because you asked, why do you think this?
Right.
And then at the end of my sentence, you pointed out, you looked at me squarely and said, Scott, that was over 20 years ago. And you were right. The political landscape has changed so dramatically. I don't think the Democrats have matured. I think that the Republicans have reverted. The other analogy is that the Democrats are the mommy party and then the Republicans are the daddy party. One of them is there for discipline, to say no, to restrain, and the other one is to give you, you know, candy before dinner. And I think there's something to be said for that, and that's kind of why I became what I became. I'm having, as I've mentioned on this podcast before, I talked to Ginny about this a lot, far more than I think she wants to hear, is a real crisis in my beliefs right now. And what am I? I cannot be a Republican the way the Republican Party has become.
Right. And for some reason, you refuse to be a Democrat. So you're an independent. I think you should just state that you're an independent now.
I'm an independent, but then that just puts you in this, like, with, you know, roughly 12 other people in the nation, it seems, that everyone has picked sides. Everyone, there's, the middle now is no man's land. We were in New Zealand. This is salient, I promise. And we went to a museum that talked about the Gallipoli fiasco.
Right.
And actually had this massive, massive, like, map, not map, but topographical rendering of the battlefield. It was huge. And it just reminded me of the no man's land, between the two desperate armies. And that if anyone who went across that got blown to bits, either by mine, shot by the other side. And I think that's kind of feels like how we are now. This sort of like wide open fields where there's plenty of room to meet, to talk, to discuss, to find, middle ground. And there is no way in God's green earth you can meet there.
I think you're probably right.
And that's where I am. I'm kind of like I think I'm a raging moderate, which I guess I'm a rhino, which means I should not be a Republican. The Democrats don't want me, so.
So you're just in limbo.
Maybe I'll just go
form your own party.
Yeah. What would we call our party? Scott and Janine party? Janine and Scott party? Chicot?
Limbo ticks? I don't know.
What did you call it?
I didn't say my party.
Limbo ticks?
Party.
What did you call it?
Yeah, and the limbo ticks. I don't know.
Limbo ticks. I like this. I'm a limbo tick. Okay, that's great. Listen, thank you everyone for listening to this week's edition of the Prickly City Podcast. Thank you, Brian Altimer, our wonderful producer, for putting the phone call to get out to Ted Rall, who is the co-author of Meet the Deplorables, Infiltrating Trump's America. We're there with his friend Harmon Leon. Terrific book you need to pick up. Thank you, Janine.
You're welcome.
thank you, WGN and WGN Plus. If you want to keep up with the antics of Carmen and Winslow, you're more than welcome to. In fact, I would beg you to go to gocomics.com/prickly city and go ahead and register, because then you get all sorts of free stuff and you can't beat free. So that's gocomics.com/prickly city. Leave a comment and maybe we'll read it here on the podcast. And if you want to contact us directly, you're more than welcome to. In fact, we'd welcome it at prickly city at gmail.com. prickly.com. So again, thank you so much. Thank you for putting up with us. We ran a little long today, and we'll talk again next week. And in the meantime, we'll see you in the funny papers.